Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome to the Mill Creek View podcast. We're focusing on the volunteer state with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community. This time, special guest Matthew Azrielli. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. Welcome to our People in the News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking to Matthew Azrielli. A new country music label in Nashville is recruiting and promoting anti-woke artists, launched by the young founder of post-millennial Canadian-American Matthew Azrielli, who is also a singer, songwriter, and guitarist. Started Based Records to promote talented country singers who are struggling to survive in the mainstream music business due to their right-leaning political and cultural views. He's brought on talent like Chris Whalen, a singer and songwriter who has written music for some of the biggest country stars, including Toby Keith, Kenny Chesney, Garth Brooks, and Trace Adkins. Azrielli told the Arizona Sun-Times that he started Based Records because music is a passion. He wanted to provide a healthy outlet for conservatives instead of just complaining. Based Records intends to appeal to a certain niche, the center right, instead of attempting to have a broader appeal that risks alienating factions, a new post-woke music genre. Based Records is working with experimental musicians, recruiting some of the best in the industry to ensure maximum success. Azrielli is building a cultural infrastructure to assist the musicians that will include touring and media appearances, a space for artists to live in. There'll be fellow travelers who can reach out to each other within the network. He told the Sun-Times they'll actually be able to say God in a song, talk about a woman or a man. Hello, Matthew. How are you today, eh?
Hey, very good. Thanks so much for having me on. Steve, what would you prefer? Is that
Steve
good?
Steve is great. Yep, absolutely.
Steve is great. And, awesome. Well, Steve, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me, and it's a real pleasure.
Yes, thanks for coming on. How does a Canadian become conservative? From what I read, it doesn't compute up there.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, you know, for me, Steve, what conservatism is it's any kind of point of differentiation from the mainstream, right? The mainstream secular, progressive, materialist Christianity that is hyper prevalent. It's the water we swim in as fish. We're fish in a fishbowl in a water of culture. That water of culture is, in my opinion, a transcendent form of progressive Christianity. And so how do you kind of escape that? Well, I grew up in French Canada, and French Canada has two points of differentiation. It's French and it's Catholic. And right away, you see the friction of French language versus English language. The opinions that somebody has, for example, when they're speaking French or any language other than English, relative to what we would call the woke politics that are actually endemic to the English language, that originate in the English language. So how did I personally come up with my opinions? You know, it's a long, long story. Originally, I created what was supposed to be a blog with a guy named Ali Tagba, an extremely talented entrepreneur, writer in Canada. And we started this blog, again, called The Post Millennial in 2017. And then one thing led to another, as you can imagine, COVID, a bunch of Canadian elections. We had a lot of success initially capturing a Canadian conservative audience because journalists in Canada were too afraid to talk to conservatives, i.e. talk to anybody outside of a very narrow set of what we would call Laurentian elites and what you in the United States call, well, I'm American too, by the way, but what we in America call the coastal elites, in Canada we call it the Laurentian elites, meaning you live between Toronto and Montreal. So we just wanted to create an actual media environment for everybody who lived outside of Toronto to Montreal, right? And what I want to do here with Based Records is create a music environment, starting with country music lovers, because that's where the great songwriters are that are conservative. That's where the great, who aren't crazy, by the way, you know what I mean? Like a center-right, even-keeled, I went hunting with my dad. I believe in God, right? I believe in democracy, right? The salt of the earth, the genuine American patriots, they listen to country music. And so that's where you want to begin. And then after that, you want to expand into other genres. But that's the shtick, you know. I'm a conservative just because I don't fully buy into the progressive nonsense. And secondly, because I want to create a better world, you know, for my grandchildren, for their grandchildren. I want to create a stable teleology, worldview, whatever you want to call it. And right now, I don't think that we're necessarily on that path, but I'm optimistic that we can be.
Yeah, and that Justin Trudeau Castro Jr., he's banned gun sales, attacked peace protesting truckers, and basically suspended all civil liberties in the name of COVID. How bad is it up there with our neighbors to the north that we may not be getting the news from down here?
So it's actually a very interesting political landscape in Canada, because as an example, that gun issue is primarily an Indigenous rights issue. Predominantly, the gun owners in Canada are actually Indigenous. So people who live in northern Canada who need it, quite frankly, if a moose is coming after you or a bear is chasing you down, you know, good luck, right? You know, good luck with, your fists. I mean, good luck. And actually, it's Indigenous advocacy groups that are really raising the alarm. Although this is nothing new, because Justin Trudeau has for a very long time been going after Indigenous groups in Canada if they don't happen to walk the party line with him. You know, for example, this is a guy, Justin Trudeau, who is really the worst of every single world when it comes to virtue signaling. He created a new holiday in Canada called Truth and Reconciliation Day. It's not a holiday, really. It's a day of mourning when we remember the crimes that we committed against Indigenous people. But what does Justin Trudeau do after he creates this day of commemoration? He doesn't meet with a single Indigenous leader. Instead, he goes surfing. All right, it's a beautiful day in the summer, this Indigenous Reconciliation Day. It would be a shame if he didn't use it to go surfing. And then those very same Indigenous groups who were robbed of their culture and their heritage, and I do believe actually that we owe them a lot, but Justin Trudeau wants to break treaties with them. The Canadian government has specific treaties with these people that allow, we allow First Nations peoples in Canada to own guns on their own land. It's like a sovereign state. It truly is like the sovereign citizen movement that you have in America that's not very well founded. In Canada, we actually have that for Indigenous people, okay? So there are bans where if you're an RCMP or a cop, you can't enter their territory. You're not allowed. However, if you're a hunter on that territory and you have to use the highway, right, to go from one settlement to another, well, now the RCMP can intercept you and they can take your guns, right? And you're not using these guns for nefarious reasons. You're using them to hunt the same way your ancestors have hunted for thousands, if not tens of thousands of years. And all of a sudden, Justin Trudeau is saying, well, you know, 10,000 years of history, that's great and all, but I have a political agenda here and I'm here to win, right? So that's one issue, right? Which is
just last month I crossed the border at the Peace Arch to empty a safe deposit box I had for years on Vancouver Island because I thought it was a safe place in case America ever went bad. But man, New Zealand, Australia, and Canada turned it up to bad to 11. Why did the Five Eyes fall so hard? You're in the news. What did you see that was prompting this?
Well, you know, it's not that we've fallen, right? I think the issue is that America has a very specific constitution that, you know, it's, and by the way, there are countries all over the world that have very specific legal factors that have allowed them to sort of allay these bizarre COVID tyrannical, these pseudo tyrannical COVID regulations. For example, Japan, because of what they did in the Second World War, they very particularly have laws that prohibit medical tyranny, right? They, of course, a lot of their war crimes were actually committed, right, by the medical establishment in Japan. And so actually their constitution prohibits that. So that's why they were never able to actually implement certain reforms the way that, let's say, a New Zealand was, right? Where you completely limit access, you completely, or even in Canada, by the way, and the Canadian media, because they're completely paid off by the federal government, they'll tell you that our regulations relative to other countries weren't so bad. They don't tell you that the country they're always comparing us to is China, which is an absurd comparison because we're a free liberal democracy, at least in theory, and China is not. But I have a guy working for me, unvaccinated, couldn't ride the bus, couldn't get in on a ride share. So it's extremely restrictive. And why did they fall? Because they didn't have, you know, the unique quirks in their laws, and they didn't have responsible judiciaries, right? London, or England, rather. I mean, England is basically, or the UK is basically London, right? But right. The UK, their Supreme Court essentially said, or their equivalent thereof basically said, you cannot impose a vaccine mandate. That's what happened. And so there was none.
Yeah.
Right?
That's However, why we were saved by our first and second, all the way right. to the 18th Amendment.
Not only that, you were also saved by how litigious conservatives in this country are, and how they understand that the courts are something they can use to their advantage. In Canada, the way our courts are structured, you remember I was saying Laurentian elite, this is a group of people who are completely bilingual in English and French. Our constitution grants people who are bilingual in English and French very specific charter rights. And if you want to be in government, you have to speak both languages. That allows a very specific kind of attitude to manifest. And if you're outside of that group, and if you can't speak French, if you're from Alberta, for example, you're screwed. So that's why at the end of the day, sorry for this very over, like this long answer.
It's great because it leads to the whole discussion. So it's great.
Right. So we don't have this legal culture in the same way that you do in the United States.
Right. Right. So where you can, like most Canadians, you are a capitalist. They'd say in the western part of Canada, a capitalist pig hoser. But right. You started an alternative news network, post-millennial, and sold it to Human Events. Right.
Correct.
Probably made a few hundred dollars on that. So good job. My good friend.
Only a few hundred dollars. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Ari Hoffman, who also writes for me at the Mill Creek View newspaper.
And I didn't know that. That's great.
Andy Ngo, the only one covering Antifa full force, but had to leave Portland, its own autonomous zone, and hide out in the UK. Anyway, that's a great lineup and many more. Why did you sell it?
I sold it in the end because, well, there are a number of reasons that I ended up selling the paper. For me, it was something that really was a runaway success. And so every additional dollar that I made with the paper, let's say, I had to start paying people more. You know, I was having this conversation with Lauren Chen yesterday. We all went out for dinner and they, you know, whatever. And, you know, I explained, we were talking about, you know, a mutual friend of ours with the paper, they'd gotten funding. And I said, look, anybody can get funding. But the challenge is working with a team and getting them to understand, first of all, that you have their back unconditionally, right? That's your job as a leader. Your job as a leader when you start a publication or any company is that you are there for your employees, right? You have to work for your employees as much as your employees work for you. At least that's my philosophy, okay? Especially because I didn't have any money at the time that I started it, right? So, you know, so every dollar that I put in, that I got in from the company, I had to then put in to the salaries of my employees. Because initially, people were completely, completely, criminally, again, I'm not admitting to anything, okay? But the point is, I was underpaying people, okay? Uh-huh. And I had to start, and, you know, as I got more success and more capital, I had to give that straight to the employees. I didn't see a dime of that. And the point that I'm trying to make is, anybody can get funding, but it takes, what real leadership is making people understand that this is their chance, right? Your employees, making them understand this is their chance to make a living. Their chance to live in the truth, right? And why did I sell it in the end? There are a number of different reasons. You know, my wife actually used to say that the entire thing with Postmillennial was one 5-year segue for me being a frustrated musician and trying to get out of music. And she was completely right. Of course, my wife is much smarter than I am. And so I was 22 when I started the outlet, and I sold it. I'm 27 now. So this is really my opportunity. You know, I'm still a relatively young man. I come into this music business from a political business where I had a lot of success. And you wouldn't believe how some country singers, and I'm talking the most brilliant artists, songwriters, et cetera, they're, you know, most people, you know, I grew up wanting to do something approximating that, not necessarily in country. I was more of an indie rock scumbag growing up, but that was something I really aspired to. And these people who are incredibly successful, you know, they're making their entire lives from music, which is a dream, but they want to do politics, right? They want to be pundits. They want to have podcasts. Well, that's something I can actually do for people now. That's a value add that I can give people. So my choice to leave the post-millennial was I wanted a guy like Jeff at Human Events who was a good, you know, I want to say outstanding character, wonderful team, treats my people well. That was very important to me, whoever I sold it to, because it's a family that I started at post-millennial. I want somebody who understands family. And he understands that very well, coming from, you know, the world of professional cheerleading, where you have to work as a team by definition. That's what it's all about. And then second of all, I wanted somebody who I wanted to preserve the, you know, at the end of the day, I was just some kid who started a very successful company. And, you know, it wasn't just, you know, I was taking all of these people and training them, right? We were training a whole new crop of conservative journalists. And I'm proud to say that we still are, right? Mia Kathel, for example, worked with us. We were her first gig out of college. She just wrote that LGBTQ sex trafficking ring story out of Town Hall. I don't know if you saw that story.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
You know, but that was her. That's her original reporting. Okay. I'm not going to claim credit fully, but I'm very proud that she was working for us because that's what we need. We need
gave
original
her start.
Stuff.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Andy is a good friend with my journalist, Jonathan Cho at Cho Show on Twitter, covering the Seattle homeless crisis. But just like this, he was fired by ABC for continued coverage that's only gotten worse for not stopping like they asked him to. How did you get them to partner with you after they had had mainstream media bad experiences? You know, the trend seems to be the good ones like Emerald Robinson fired from Newsmax, or producer Brianna Morello fired by Fox for no vaccine, Jonathan, Grant Stitchfield, Laura Logan, many more. What do you make of an independent path breaking away from the Disney, Murdoch, and Comcast Universal motherships?
Yeah, it's a good question, right? Here's the issue. So I can answer that in number. And you're asking, like, how did I get Andy on board? How did I convince Andy and Ari to join, kind of?
When you were a fledgling, let's say, countercultural or counter work sure. corporation news outlet, how did you get them to come on board and say, yeah, we want to do what ultimately turned out to be independent for them,
right? Yeah,
versus the multi-million dollar side projects that the Rupert Murdoch family at Fox had.
Sure. Well, that brings up the point that we were talking about earlier. Anybody can have a shit ton of money, right? Not anybody, you know what I mean? But a lot of people have a lot of money, and yet they don't do a lot with that money, right? The point is, whenever I start a business, I'm completely loyal to the people that work for me. Now, that being said, if you start working for me and in 2 or 3 months, you're no good, unfortunately, for some reason, you're not working hard enough, you're not necessarily at the level of competence that we need, you know, then we have to let you go. But beyond that, if you're a real standout, there's nothing I'm not going to do for you, right? And so Andy, doesn't matter how many boycotts we were put through, you know, we were really put through the ringer with Andy. I never gave a shit, okay? And it wasn't a Machiavellian calculation of, oh, but I get X dollars or whatever. Because in fact, that's not the game I ever played. I never played what I call the grift game. The grift game where you're like, oh, I'm under attack. Give me X amount of dollars. I think that's horseshit. Actually, I think that we in conservative media, there are two problems. The first problem is that it's entirely subsidized. And so all of these conservative outlets that say, oh, corporate subsidies stifle innovation, they ruin creativity, and they create completely stagnant markets. I agree. And that's the problem with conservative media. They're completely subsidized.
So now we're getting into it, because Daily Wire moved here from LA, right?
I'm not going to, please, you know, one second. Well, but let me give you the second problem, because before we get into that, the second problem is the grifter problem. And the grifter problem is actually, in my opinion, more egregious, because there you're not even shilling for somebody. You're simply taking money from people and you're expecting them to fund you when you're being completely ineffectual and you're not actually changing anything. So, okay, so now we can go on to your next question. Sorry, but those are the two problems.
Daily Wire, Steven Crowder, public spat, $50 million, who knew, right? But what do you think of their business model with news, podcasts, and the occasional movies with like Gina Carano, also fired from Disney's Star Wars universe franchise, and of course, fellow Canadian Jordan Peterson, canceled up there institutionally, governmentally, but they're giving him the outlet. He seems to be public enemy number one in Canada. What do you think of the way Daily Wire is doing it?
Honestly, I can't comment because I don't know. Had they continued negotiations beyond an offer sheet, I don't know if those punitive terms regarding extractions, you know, should YouTube cancel him and should he be demonetized, I don't know if Crowder could have negotiated those out of his contract, right? And I'll be the first to tell you that whenever I have a trick when I negotiate with people, I create my delusions, right? I love to say, you know, and I was coaching my executive, you know, the little team that I have here, executive team, whatever. I sound like a big mocker, but the point is I have a few guys working under me. And I'm like, look, when we negotiate with people, we want to be delusional, right? We want to state, what is my dream, my fantasy?
Part of the deal, I think you're saying right here.
Right. Yeah, perhaps. And of course, Daily Wire would love to have a deal with Steven Crowder where he pays them. Of course, that's the dream, right? But it's also absurd. You know, is that, would I do that on a $50 million deal? I don't think so. Okay. But you know what? If they're delusional like I am, I can only applaud them for maintaining their delusions. Okay. I can't blame them. So, you know, I am definitely not without sin. I can't throw stones on this, you know, like, for example, when Right Wing Watch, who, by the way, Right Wing Watch, they were responsible for the Proud Boys being deemed white supremacists. But when they did a hit piece on me, what did they say? Azrieli is cheap, right? How cheap do I have to be that they that the ire on people is that, you know, they're problematic, they're so on. In what way am I problematic? In the sense that I am exceptionally frugal, exceptionally cheap. It's true. Unless you're a longstanding employee and I value you, in which case you're essentially a blood brother and I have your back even when we're against the wall together. However, and by the way, nobody else is like that. And that's why I was able to retain that kind of talent, because I would never fucking drop a person. That being said, when it comes to these contracts, I think it's extremely bizarre. Like, I think Crowder actually engaged in a grift, to tell you the truth, publicizing that contract and then saying, hey, everybody, look at my Stop Big Con thing. Everybody give me your emails and give me your money and give me your time and give me your attention. Okay. Now, Daily Wire, was the contract bad? Yes. But it's a contract I would have given, okay? I'll be honest with you. I would love that contract. You pay me and you make me money and I extract money from you. That's amazing. But if I'm Steven, you know, I also wouldn't do what Steven Crowder's doing, which is essentially saying, hey, the conservative media ecosystem is rotten. You know how we fix it? You give me money. What a solution. What a convenient solution. There's a big problem in the world and I have to fix it by giving you money. Wow. So, you know, and I could never run my business, by the way, like that, no. You know?
So Dan Bongino's ranked pretty high in infotainment on the podcast charts. And he got in a pretty public spat with Sinclair, supposedly conservative media group, over vaccine mandate. He's canceled his radio show after his contract is up, he says. What do you make of conservative companies behaving like pharma pushers after taking government bailout money? You know, Prager, Fox, many others did too.
Well, look, so first of all, I'm going to state outright, I got two Pfizer jabs, all right? So okay. I am not by any means, you know, but that being said, I also wanted to see my wife giving birth in the hospital in Quebec. And without those jabs, I wouldn't have been able to do that. Right. So whatever, God willing, there won't be anything negative. And who knows? That being said, what do I think about that? I mean, in Canada, you're not able to advertise pharmaceuticals. There's no pharmaceutical advertising in Canada. In the United States, on the other hand, there is. And there are many ramifications to this outside of the vaccine. Namely, the fact that, you know, prescription drugs, you have more prescription drugs that people are taking in the United States than you do everywhere else in the world combined. You know, and you could credit that to obesity, you could credit that to whatever, but the fact remains that it's a very lucrative industry. So I can also tell you that when you're dependent on ad dollars, you know, you're going to have to make some compromises. In my case, we were already persona non grata, right? We already had Andy No. We already had original conservative content. So we were as countercultural and as samizdat as you could possibly be. Nobody would work with us. Very few people would give us money. We had to make money as a result of ad wrappers and ad strategies and essentially, you know, programmatic advertising for a very long time, rather than direct. Okay. So I've never had to make that choice myself, but if I can imagine myself in their position, I can understand. I don't think I would make that compromise. Okay. I don't think I would fuck with my content creator, because what people don't understand, the executives in conservative media don't understand, is that people support creators, right? People support specific personalities, and Bongino has a wonderful team. Okay. And his team, I love them to death. And there's loyalty there, right? Every single conservative media personality has a clique or a team behind them. They're completely interwoven and interconnected. And Sinclair, I can't comment on their business model, but it's a very archaic, it's a very legacy model where people don't appreciate the fact that what that personality says, they're the fucking shot caller, okay? They're like the country music artist, right? And you, if you break ties with your artists, all the money that you poured into that contract, that person's marketing, it's all flushed down the fucking toilet. It doesn't make, in my opinion, and by the way, Bongino has also been targeted by a number of boycotts.
Oh yeah.
And so if you're afraid of boycotts, don't be in conservative media, right? Just don't be in conservative media, because the entire point of this media is that it's counter-regime. Right.
Currently, I know all about that. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, there you go.
So since you were a new media, let's call you, even though it was conservative, being online, not print like my newspaper. Let's talk about the Parler assassination by Amazon AWS and the FBI paying Twitter to censor conservatives and Facebook, you know, PayPal, Eventbrite canceling conservative event ticket sales. Big tech doesn't like guys like you. How are you navigating the distribution channels to get your music out now?
Here's the thing. I'm not necessarily worried, and I'll tell you why, or I'll tell you my strategy at least. The strategy is to work from within country music, okay? At the end of the day, people who are making decisions in country music now are in Los Angeles, they're in New York, okay? But people who listen to country music are in Arkansas. They're in Louisiana, they're in Texas, they're in Tennessee, and there's a massive cultural split there. And I actually believe, I'm very optimistic. I'm hoping to make you an optimist, by the way, Steve. I believe that in 3 to 5 years, people are going to see, especially in a high interest environment where there's all of this bullshit, where you get rid of all this bullshit. I mean, remember, we were in 20, 30 years of no cost money, yeah. Free money. 1-3% loans, yes. Okay? In that kind of environment, you can focus on frivolous things like ESG. You can focus on frivolous things like social justice, right? By the way, real social justice is important, right? Namely, like you shouldn't be able to lose your job because you wouldn't take an experimental vaccine. Maybe that's a social justice issue we could talk about. I don't know. The point is, even though, again, I got it, okay?
Next time.
Yeah, I got it, right? So, and I believe that it helps you maybe not die. I mean, honestly, I don't know anymore, but whatever, at the time that I took it, right? But no, I think broadly speaking, actually, I do. Honestly, I do believe it. I guess I am a vaccine shill. I'm sorry. Look, sorry. Okay.
That's
But the
okay.
point,
Let's talk about the business side.
sorry, I'll talk about the business, you know, but the point is, let me restart. The point is, I'm going, in my opinion, 3 to 5 years from now, because debt is actually going to cost something and people are going to actually need to sell products that people want to buy, even in entertainment. My prediction is that conservative, so-called conservative media, so-called family-friendly content, so-called, I don't know, just like anti-woke content or post-woke content, which is something you said, which is, I think, a better moniker, that is going to become the standard. Because people are going to say, oh shit, nobody's subscribing to my subscription platform anymore if I'm Netflix, right?
Yeah.
Nobody's going to be subscribing to my Amazon Prime anymore or my Disney Plus because
Well,
I'm choosing.
unfortunately, to get to that bridge, uh-oh, we dropped
I'm
you.
back.
Oh,
I'm
to
here.
get to that bridge, we got Newsmax, the same one that dropped Emerald, being dropped by AT&T's Dish, so never woke enough. AT&T did that to OAN too, and turns out it might be because AT&T, American Telephone and Telegraph, has the $8 billion contract with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and Newsmax is going against the Iran deal. So it's political, not the number four news network on their cable, which is profitable. P politics over profit and supporting terrorist regimes as well. I can't wait till
We
the five-year
we
number comes
don't
along.
the point I'll make is that we don't know why anybody does anything. The fact of the matter is that the entire model of the society we live in, the Anglo-American model, is functionally oligarchic.
Yes.
And it's oligarchic in its structure, in the governing structure, and it's also oligarchic in its corporate governance structure, right? A large company like AT&T, no single shareholder will have more than 8 or 10%, if that's a huge shareholding, right? Whereas, you know, most of the rest of the world, you'll have family businesses. Even when it comes to media properties, there'll be family businesses. I mean, hell, the New York Times originally was a family property, and it still basically is. And so is Comcast, by the way.
Sinclair, yeah.
Sinclair, too, right? So, you know, when you look at these huge companies like AT&T, which really don't have that much of an interest in their media, right? Really, their telecom. And that's the big business. And this is a big thing in Canada, too, by the way, where we have telecom and they happen to own media. And it's not the other way around. They only really care about the telecom side of the business. You know, it's actually
Conrad
impossible.
Black.
Well, what happened? Anyway, look, Conrad Black is a whole other story. We'll get
Yeah.
to him later.
Yeah, we are
But
running out of time, actually, believe it or not.
oh, no. Oh, no. Sorry. Well,
It's
anyway,
okay. No,
but
this is part of the story I wanted to get from you, but
yeah,
pretty
but
obvious
the.
question. I just want to now pivot to your label
Right.
base. Pretty obvious question. Why Nashville? What brings you to the great state of Tennessee?
Right, exactly. And so my hope is to make you optimistic by saying, look, eventually we're going to have to make music for 30 to 40% of the population who are being deliberately ignored. Okay? And there's a huge opportunity there commercially and spiritually, if you really believe in this stuff, which I do. Okay? So commercially, there's a huge chance because that's 30 to 40% of the fucking population
It's
who
exactly
are.
what Rupert Murdoch and Roger Ailes did when there were three networks, all left-leaning, and they said, we got this entire 50% base of Americans who are not being catered to. Let's cater to them, and boom, overnight success.
Exactly. And so that's what I intend to do with the music side. Now, you know better than anybody probably that Fox is and Sinclair, they're kind of reneging on their promise. They're no longer willing to be
Right.
right wing,
Which
right?
is why
Because
I exist. Exactly.
which is why you exist, it's why I exist, it's why frankly we all exist. We're trying to do our part to say, hold on, we believe we want to choose life over death. Okay. For me, that's what being, we can call it conservative, but conservatism is just 20, liberalism with a 20-year time delay, and that's not what I am. So I guess you could call me in the same way we Jews have reformed, courage, conservative, orthodox. You could call me an orthodox whatever.
Well,
I'm
that's
an
why I'm
or
constitutionalist, because that is timeless, just like I'm
Yeah,
biblical, old
exactly.
and
In
new.
America, you know, the true orthodoxy is it could manifest as constitutionalist, and I respect that. So, you know, let's try to look at the reality, which is that Nashville is the home of country music. Country music is where we're going to start br bringing our countercultural revolution. That's my dream. that the countercultural revolution starts right here in Nashville, Tennessee. And
that's
then
exactly
God willing,
why, I love it. That's exactly spread. Why I'm here too. What did you make of Jason Aldean's PR firm Green Room dropping him over a woke heart attack in reaction to his wife, Brittany, proclaiming herself proud to be a woman? I mean, Green Room co-owner Tyne Parrish shared, "Music has always been and remains the Green Room's core focus. So we had to make the difficult decision after 17 years to step away from representing Jason. We aren't the best people for the gig anymore, but we'll always be big fans of his music. He is one of the greatest live entertainments in country music." That's crazy. Some weird class BS right there. I mean, even country star Maren Morris.
Completely expected. It's completely expected.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. You know, my opinion is, what else do you expect? And that's why loyalty is ultimately the number one thing in anything. Okay. Because you can be in any industry now. And what we've established is that your employer doesn't give a shit about you. Okay. My radical strategy is, what if I gave a shit about the people who are working for me? Okay. Maybe they would appreciate that. And the reason I made my hundreds of dollars, okay, with the post-millennial is because I dared to give a shit about my employees, okay? I dared to actually have their welfare and their best interests, not to take a cent out of the dollar to myself, to funnel the gains to them and every opportunity I took. And look, it's not going to look good for whoever the hell this PR company is, but I'll tell you that if you're an artist, I don't know if you want to work with these people anymore. Now,
well, that's my point, because Green Room,
their clients might be
Dirk Bentley, Thomas Rhett, Lady A, which used to be Antebellum, which is foolish, the Warren Treaty. Anyway, I think many country stars are surprisingly liberal. Have you found that to be true? I know the songwriters aren't, but the front people usually are. I mean, Jason is a huge moneymaker. For them to toss him instead of back him, even to protect just profits, is pretty shocking, in my opinion.
For me, it just I think the timing is good. I think I have good timing. What can I tell you? I'm a lucky guy. And you know, I get, well, what does this mean for Jason? It's a tragedy. What does this mean for the industry? It sucks. But ultimately, in 3 to 5 years, this kind of approach is going to be unsustainable. Lady Antebellum, I didn't even know they were going by Lady A. I think it's interesting that the term Antebellum is too radical for them. I mean, what, you know, okay, I guess that says it all.
Yeah, it's right? Like the Dixie Chicks 2.0. But, you know, Tyler graduated from Vanderbilt, so there you go. Okay, back to you. After COVID, when all the venues were shut down, and here in Tennessee, masks and vax cards were mandatory, you know, even the Bluebird, did you fear for the new company that, you know, Spotify and iTunes would kill the live performance market anyway?
So actually, I was still post-millennial mode back then. I was still post-millennial, and I only sold post-millennial in April. And I got into the live music business in June or July. But or this whole business, right, the music business, I only started it this summer. But we're already making great headway because of my old company. We're signing great artists, and we're talking to promoters. But I'll tell you that I've spoken with a number of people who are venue owners, who are managers, and restaurant owners and everything, and they lost fucking everything. People lost, you know, they lost their retirements. They lost hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Employees.
And they lost their employees. And their employees lost too, by the way. Okay. Sure. So people got, it was very unfair, right? Even if, by the way, even if you were vaccinated, you still lost your job.
Yep.
Because the economy turned so sour for very specific people. Now, actually, when I ran the news site, I was a beneficiary of that because everybody was at home on their phone buying stuff, looking at advertisements online. And so that benefited my business. Okay. But that being said, what didn't benefit my business was the fact that we were trying to tell the truth about the nature of these lockdowns, the fact that they were fundamentally tyrannical. And we've towed the line very carefully in Canada. But even to the extent that we did that, we were still specifically censored by Facebook, by Twitter. We were cross-platform censored, and we had to be so careful. We had to seek so many third-party accreditations simply to keep our heads above water. And I'm proud that we did, because I think, God willing, we'll be able to maintain a position as a non-regime or at least an independent media outlet long after I'm gone. You know, hopefully I live another 70, 80 years. but the post-millennial will live hundreds of years more. That's
yeah, you've created a legacy for sure. I was surprised actually when Live Nation sold themselves a Ticketmaster. I mean, not really. I've been around long enough to see that coming. We got about 5 minutes left.
Yeah.
They really messed up with the Taylor Swift ticket debacle. How do you, you know, an Eventbrite as kind of an alternative, but you know, they are censoring conservatives. How do acts make money on ticket sales anymore? All that's left is t-shirts.
You know what? That's the great thing about being conservative, right? Because when you're boycotted, let's say you have a bad actor, a ticket seller that's a bad actor, but they're not going to sell your tickets. It's like somebody saying, listen, man, I wish I could steal from you, but like you just, you know, it would be bad for me as a thief. I wouldn't be able to steal from other people anymore. I guess you know what I mean? My mom
is that yeah, great. Different mentality. Yeah, you bet. Well, you know, John Rich released a number one hit on Truth Social, Progress.
Right.
Not sure he made any money on it, but it was number one on Apple's iTunes. Do you think
I'm
that's
sure
the future?
Did. Well, so streaming, you make money because you own the masters. Right. You own the masters. And so that's how you make your money as a label. And then there's also live performances and live gigs. And at the end of the day, you can sell those tickets on your website. No one can stop you. And so the funny thing is the parallel economy, the parallel conservative economy, what left wingers are trying to do now that Elon Musk has bought Twitter, for example, and they try pathetically in the same way that we tried pathetically with Parler. In my opinion, Parler is not a great website. Okay, in the first
not
place.
Anymore. No, no,
no. Well, it used to be a bad website. Now it's a non-existent website, right? So yeah. You know, I think that our ability to create a parallel economy—that's our core strength because we are the small business owners of this country. We are the independently wealthy, or at least we have our own money, even if we don't have a lot of it. And so we're going to work to preserve the values that we hold dear. We're not beholden to anybody. That's very important.
Yeah, I'm a bit older than you, and I miss going to Tower Records and standing online for big show tickets and album releases, but that's how old I am. My kids never owned a vinyl record, and we don't even have a CD player, and even in our cars or house. Streaming is like water from a drinking fountain, you know, free. I used to keep all my concert ticket stubs, and now it's on my phone only. I'm going to a UT basketball game this weekend. It's only on my phone. No, nothing to keep. No memories there. I don't even want to know what a non-fungible token is. Where do you see it going?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, where do you see it all going now that you're in it?
Well, now that listen, we're going to be doing our touring. My ambition is for us to be running the tours ourselves, us to be running the venues ourselves. Right. We're going to be finding red, white and blue friendly venues throughout the country, distributors throughout the country. And we're going to be creating a parallel network. And ultimately, it's going to be a hell of a lot of work. But the gains that we can make could potentially be enormous, because if I'm able to find one guy who owns, you know, let's say a 500 person venue, and then another guy who owns like a really a big venue, like in, you know, right outside of like Tacoma, right, or whatever, or outside of Seattle, or you know what I mean, like an hour outside of Seattle, and there's a good act, and they happen in
40 minutes from you. I go every Thursday night to Fox and Lock and Leaper's Fork for open mic night. I'm happy that that's still striving, but in downtown Seattle or San Francisco, that's not so fun to have to wade over the garbage and the needles and whatever. The big cities have kind of lost it. Now, Titan Stadium is getting a multi-billion-dollar upgrade, so big shows and Ticketmaster will be fine. But I think festivals are where it's at. I noticed Perry Farrell's of Jane's Addiction when he blew up Lollapalooza in Chicago, but that's kind of over now. Same reasons, liability insurance. Do you see the revival of festivals as well as small venues?
Inevitably. Small venues, big festivals too, but ultimately these big festivals are going to be beholden by Ticketmaster, right? Which means they're going to be beholden by Twitter. Which means if somebody doesn't like you on Twitter and you happen to have a minorly controversial view, or you have the word antebellum in your name, oh my God, you know, you're fucked. So
protesters will come out. Yeah.
Right. And so what you really, which is a great opportunity, right? And that's why I'm trying to say we should all actually be optimistic. Things can't be bad forever. This is America. This is a land of boundless, irrational optimism, okay? And things will get better, okay? The point is, don't despair, because there's no point in despair. Just be optimistic. And when I bring an act to your town, buy a ticket. All right, because it's going to be a great time.
What can we look forward to from you and Based this year?
We're going to have a couple. We're going to have at least three fantastic artists, very well-known artists, who are going to be debuting on our platform. You know, you'll know some of them as country acts, traditional country acts, who are being a little bit more political, and you'll know some of them as very well-known political pundits, who are now suddenly going to be really solid musical acts because of the machine that we're building. The point is this: we're going to build a machine. We're going to get, because we're a publishing house as well as a record label. So we're going to have fantastic songs. We're going to have from start to finish, from the writing to the mastering. It's going to be top, and we're going to put quality first. So expect high quality, fantastic stuff from the Volunteer State.
Awesome. All right, Matthew. Well, we are in overtime here, but I appreciate you. I thank you for your time, and we are at the end. So please just tell everyone, all the listeners, where they can go to find out more about you and Based Records and anything else you have projects going on or live shows we can go to soon.
Awesome. So we have a wonderful show in Austin, Texas, April 15th. It's at Joe Rogan's Club, The Vulcan. Tickets are available now. Go on Twitter at Based Records to find it, or Twitter at Minds. Minds.com is who we're working with to put it all together. Destiny is going to be there. Peter Boghossian is going to be there. Dr. Boghossian is going to be there, as well as Jack Posobiec. He's also going to be there. And we're going to have some fantastic acts there. We're going to have Ira Dean, Jeffrey Steele. We've just confirmed with them that they're going to be partnering together as a duo. Both of them, you know, tens and tens of millions of records sold with their songs on it. Fantastic songwriters, fantastic artists. And we're extremely excited to put together the rest of the music for that event. And of course, follow us at Based Records, BASTE, like you're basting a turkey.
Or that you're not woke, you're based. Thanks again for coming on with us. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show. Mr. Steve, what did you think of our guest, Matthew Azrieli?
Well, I could spend all... I would have liked to have been the third party in that one. I mean, I was moving and shaking. I love what this guy's doing. He's right up my alley. Quite frankly, I was a musician, and I was hoping to get the big-time record deal, and that never happened. So I went into podcasting as my outlet for creativity. Just like he said, he couldn't do it with music. He moved on and he started a alternative media platform, which he became very successful. All my podcasting, I've had a lot of experience, 14 years, haven't made a lot of money. So right now we're working towards a different thing, but I love what he said. Thank you.
Okay. Well, check's in the mail. So let's start with arguably the greatest promoter tech genius of our time. Some of the kids around today may have never heard of him, but you, maybe listening to me right now on one of his products. Let's play clip number one.
The thing I would say is when you grow up, you tend to get told that the world is the way it is and your life is just to live your life inside the world, try not to bash into the walls too much, try to have a nice family life, have fun, save a little money. But life, that's a very limited life. Life can be much broader once you discover one simple fact, and that is everything around you that you call life was made up by people that were no smarter than you. And you can change it. You can influence it. You can build your own things that other people can use. And the minute that you understand that you can poke life and actually something will, you know, if you push in, something will pop out the other side, that you can change it, you can mold it. That's maybe the most important thing, is to
That is powerful, Steve.
Yeah, thank you, Steve Jobs. Died too young for your legacy of beautiful tech products that work. Now let's hear from one that is still with us. Clip number two, please.
Anyway, so antibodies, antivirals. We think we can also have very early in an epidemic, a thing you can inhale that will mean that you can't be infected, a blocker, an inhaled blocker. We also need to fix the three problems with vaccines. The current vaccines are not infection blocking. They're not broad, so when new variants come up, you lose protection. And they have very short duration, particularly in the people who matter, which are old people. And every one of those things is fixable. In fact, doing that work is going to help vaccinology very, very broadly. Anyway, so...
Yeah, right? Now he tells us, even he admits the Frankenstein monster he funded doesn't work and isn't safe and effective like they promised. Let's keep it moving. Let's clip number three.
I think early next year we'll be in the phase of chasing up people who haven't come forward to get their vaccination or have missed their bookings and so on. So everyone will be able to get a vaccine between now and the end of the year. But of course, you know, and I want every New Zealander to come forward, but human behaviour suggests that there will be some people that we have to actually really go out and look for, and some of that may spill into next year. But our commitment is everyone will have the opportunity to get the vaccine by the end of the year. Everyone will, but I can't say that, you know, that we're not going to have some hesitant people or some people who just haven't come forward that we don't have to go out and find next year.
Thank God for the hesitant people.
So that is the new Prime Minister of New Zealand, who replaced the old Hitlerian New Zealand Prime Minister. Nice, huh? Go out and look for unvaccinated peoples, right?
Like they're hunting for deer or something?
Pretty much. Yeah. Or if you remember your history of the 30s, they were hunting a certain kind of person as well. So yeah. Let's jump to number four.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us.
People who are incubators for every variant to come, walking around lawfully unvaccinated? That's psychotic.
For the unvaccinated, you're looking at a winter of severe illness and death. For yourselves, your families, and the hospitals you may soon overwhelm.
About this, in a world of threats and tyrants and terror, you know what our biggest enemy is in America?
You.
Our fellow Americans.
They are the ones that are propagating this outbreak.
Being frustrated that there is still a percentage of the population who are not vaccinated.
I wish that he would go further to restrict the activities of the unvaccinated.
Vaccinated person having a heart attack? Yes, come right on in. We'll take care of you. Unvaccinated guy who gobbled horse goo? Rest in peace, Wheezy. You're...
25% can cause a lot of damage, and they are.
If you're willing to walk among us unvaccinated, you are an enemy.
Well, you know, it's my rights, and okay. But I don't care.
The pandemic of the unvaccinated.
Well, look, the only pandemic we have is among the unvaccinated. And they're killing people.
Freedom not to follow the facts, even if your freedom kills people? What kind of freedom is that? What kind of freedom do they really want?
We have a pandemic because of the unvaccinated, and they're sowing enormous confusion.
The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals, are overrunning emergency rooms and intensive care units, leaving no room for someone with a heart attack or pancreatitis or cancer.
Shouldn't they have to pay more into the system because they are collapsing our health system? They're the ones in the ERs.
Require vaccination universally. Have the military run it. If you don't want to get vaccinated,
they did.
You
Operation
better be
Warp
ready
Speed.
To prove your conscientious objector status in court.
It's almost like it's going to be two Americas.
So the president of the United States didn't seem to get the message that the juice doesn't work and is actually harming people. September 9th, 2021, Associated Press, the unvaccinated can cause a lot of damage, and they are. No, we just listened to that. Okay, the mainstream media didn't get the message either. Here's a media darling, another one. You just heard a clip of a bunch of them. A former jail convict for insider trading, Martha Stewart, getting paid to make a public service announcement to get vaccinated with a samurai sword, no less. March 7th, 2022, AP, experts say COVID-19 has become a disease of the unvaccinated. Play that clip, please.
You know that unwelcome guest everyone wishes would just leave already? That's COVID-19. That's why I got the new updated booster, designed to help protect against recent Omicron variants. Got it.
Well, she's a paid shill. She's an actress.
Yep. January 23rd, 2023, Daniel Horowitz, 12 new safety signals showing devastating dangers from COVID shots. Daniel Horowitz, CR podcast. I listen to it every day. He starts off quoting the Nuremberg Code. During the course of the experiment, the scientist in charge must be prepared to terminate the experiment at any stage if he has probable cause to believe in the exercise of the good faith, superior skill, and careful judgment required of him that a continuation of the experiment is likely to result in injury, disability, or death to the experimental subject, Nuremberg Code number 10. Here's just a sampling of 12 points from the past few weeks, what out of many more. Each one could alone should have been enough to suspend the shots, terminate the technology in the pipeline, and investigate the actors behind it. I can't read them all, but you certainly should. Number one, 17% of children experience some cardiac symptom after the Pfizer shot. Number two, 0 of 1,179 COVID hospitalizations in New South Wales were unvaccinated, according to New South Wales Health, which breaks down COVID hospitalization and deaths by cohorts of various levels of vaccination for the 2 weeks ending December 31st, 2022. Not a single COVID hospitalization was among the fully vaccinated. Number four, FDA admits massive elevated risk of heart attacks, blood clots, and pulmonary emboli. FDA researchers published the results of a massive observational study of 30.7 million Medicare patients in 2021 and found that people who took the shot found that the shots increased risk of pulmonary embolism by 54%, acute myocardial infarction by 42%, blood clotting by 91%, and platelet disorder by 44%. They claim this is only an early warning signal and downplays the results, but they harmonize with many other surveys, studies, reporting, and an understanding of the shot's mechanism of action. Number six, new bivalent booster, even worse. Remember the boosters that were approved with nothing but antibody test and 8 blind mice? Well, now there are results of clinical trials for the bivalent booster approved last September, and members of the FDA advisory committee are expressing anger and not seeing this data. It turns out that 1.9% of the study participants who received the original booster became infected, while 3.2% of those with the new bivalent shot got COVID. This in itself demonstrates that not only does the detection of more antibodies not necessarily mean better clinical outcomes, but more antibodies of the wrong type can facilitate infection. Number 10, VAERS analysis shows 500 injuries with greater safety signals than myocarditis. By now, anyone not under a rock knows that the vaccines could cause myocarditis, but according to an FOIA, Freedom of Information Act document obtained by the Epoch Times, it turns out that the CDC conducted its own analysis of VAERS from December 2020 through the July 2022 and found that there were over 500 categories of injuries with louder safety signals than even myocarditis. Specifically, as Hebrew University professor Joshua Gutzkow, explains, there are 503 AEs with proportional reporting ratios larger than myocarditis and 552 with PRRs larger than pericarditis. Overall, in just a year and a half of Moderna's and Pfizer's COVID jabs, the safety signals were 5.5 times larger than any serious reports for vaccines given to adults in the U.S. since 2009. Number 11, the CDC anticipates over 1,000 VAERS reports per day. The agency didn't make a mistake. Bureaucrats knew from August 2020 that they expected major problems with the vaccine. Remember, August 2020, we're going to play something from there. Disability numbers skyrocketed in U.S. and U.K., coincidentally coinciding perfectly with vaccine take-up. The U.K. Institute for Fiscal Studies published a report last month showing that the number of people on disability claims doubled in the U.K. from the summer of 2021 to July 2022. Consider the fact that in 1999, Dr. Fauci explained to Congress that you can have a vaccine that is totally fine at first, but then as late as 12 years later, all hell breaks loose. A virus, HIV, is killing people. Anthony Fauci warns, if you give people a vaccine and a year goes by, everybody's fine. Then you give it to thousands of people, and 12 years later, all hell breaks loose. Then what have you done? Fauci, what have you done? Let's listen to the next clip.
Starting yesterday, we began executing on our plans by distributing 3.9 million doses of Johnson & Johnson to states, tribes, and territories, and also to pharmacies and community health centers. Johnson & Johnson doses will be delivered as early as tomorrow. We're allocating the J&J vaccine the exact same way we allocate Pfizer and Moderna's vaccine, proportional to a state, tribe, or territory's population. So, for example, if a state represents 2% of the U.S. population, it receives approximately 2% of the Pfizer allocation, 2% of the Moderna allocation, and will now receive 2% of the J&J allocation that is made to states, tribes, and territories. We have directed states to manage distribution of all three vaccines in a fair and equitable way. And we will continue to monitor that closely. As part of that work, the CDC is tracking distribution of vaccines across a range of equity metrics, including zip codes and social vulnerability index data. We have three very effective vaccines, and all communities should have equitable and even access to each vaccine.
Can we just stop there? I just want to get sick.
That's Jeff Zients, folks. Do you know who the hell Jeff Zients is, Steve?
No, I do not, but I have seen his mug around a few times.
That is Biden's new chief of staff. Kind of a big job, right?
Oh.
Chief to the president, in charge of all his policies, the policies that all the departments of the government execute on. Here's the head for Center for Disease Control looking out for us and our most precious commodity, our kids. Play number six.
After becoming eligible, about 900,000 children ages 5 to 11 will have received their first vaccine dose by the end of today. Another 700,000 already have appointments to get the shot, but there is a long way to go with 28 million kids in that age group now eligible. I spoke about all this with the CDC director, Dr. Rochelle Walensky, and asked her if, as more kids get vaccinated, she foresees a time when masks can come off in school.
We have over 95% of our schools open for full in-person learning. We still have about 85% of our counties that are in high or substantial community transmission. And so while I'm encouraged that numbers are coming down, I would say as our children are starting to get vaccinated just a week into this program, to continue to scale up our vaccinations for these children and to not yet get complacent with our mitigation and prevention strategies that are keeping our children in school.
So that means kids should continue to wear masks even if they're vaccinated?
And I would say masks are for now, but they are not forever.
She's a demon doll.
Play number seven.
Dr. Walensky, in my last minute here, let me just ask you, the CDC says that while fewer children have been sick with COVID-19 compared to adults, children can be infected, get sick, and spread the virus. With the authorization of Pfizer yesterday for children 12 to 15, what would you say to parents who are considering getting their kids vaccinated now?
I would encourage all parents to get their children vaccinated. I know many parents are enthusiastic and have been texting me, can't wait to get their children vaccinated. I recognize that some parents want to sort of see how it goes first, but I am encouraging all parents to get their children vaccinated. Some parents won't want to be first, but I'm also encouraging children to ask for the vaccine. I have a 16-year-old myself, and I can tell you he wanted to get the vaccine. He wants his life back. These kids want to go back to school. They want to go back to the things they love.
Wow, that was May 11th, 2021.
Exactly. Tell us the truth. Just tell us the truth for once. People are starting to get very afraid out there. If the censorship gets worse, there will be panic, and I don't want that. We have a First Amendment. It's number one, not number nine, for a reason. Truth shall set you free, but government never does that. Did you see this headline, Steve? JustTheNews.com. Feds adapting AI used to silence ISIS to combat American dissent on vaccines and elections. DARPA, the same folks who created the vaccine, set four specific goals for the program. One, detect, classify, measure, and track the A, formation, development, and spread of ideas and concept memes, and B, purposeful or deceptive messaging and misinformation. Two, recognize persuasion campaign structures and influence operations across social media sites and communities. Three, identify participants and intent and measure effects of persuasion campaigns. Four, counter messaging of detected adverse influence operations. The new versions of this technology is openly targeting two groups, those wary of potential adverse effects from the COVID-19 vaccine and those skeptical of recent U.S. election results. Mike Benz, executive director of the Foundation for Freedom Online, the National Science Foundation, NSF, with an annual budget of around $10 billion, requested an 18.7% increase in appropriations from Congress in its latest budgetary request. Have we forgotten already the CIA killed Kennedy? Not a conspiracy, now fact. The trust in government is at an all-time low, and the same with media. Stick with me, folks. I won't lie to you. Stay tuned for my thought of the week. Welcome to my thought of the week. Thanks for sticking with me. A nation of sheep will beget a government of wolves. Edward R. Murrow, American broadcast journalist and war correspondent. He first gained prominence during World War II with a series of live radio broadcasts from Europe for the news division of CBS. Whoever controls the media controls the mind. Jim Morrison, American singer, poet, and songwriter, who is the lead vocalist of the rock band The Doors. Due to his wild personality, poetic lyrics, distinctive voice, unpredictable and erratic performance, and the dramatic circumstances surrounding his life and early death, Morrison is regarded by music critics and fans as one of the most influential frontmen in rock history. In the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man and brave and hated and scorned. When his cause succeed, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. Mark Twain. All I know is just what I read in the papers, and that's an alibi for my ignorance. Will Rogers, American vaudeville performer, actor, and humorous social commentator. He was born as a citizen of the Cherokee Nation in the Indian Territory and is known as Oklahoma's favorite son. Last one. The television is real. It is immediate. It has dimension. It tells you what to think and blast it in. It must be right. It seems so right. It rushes you on so quickly to its conclusions, your mind hasn't time to protest. What nonsense. Ray Bradbury, Fahrenheit 451, one of the most celebrated 20th century American writers. He worked in a variety of modes, including fantasy, science fiction, horror, mystery, and realistic fiction. Take out a book from the library. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Matt Azrazelli, for supporting and promoting an alternative majority opinion in arts and entertainment. Canada ain't all bad. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper. Peace in our time.
Children and the pumpkins at the county fair. They were looking for America behind every turn, flying the very colors that so many love to burn. I'll cruise the countryside with my dad and my brother, row after row of cotton and corn, moving through this place just like rolling thunder. Lord, I love the land where I was born.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.